Hello, everyone, and welcome back to the Next Lander Watchcast. And folks, some guys are still coming to kill us. For the next 4 weeks at least, some guys are definitely still coming to kill us. Caravella.
Yeah. Hey, Alex Navarro. In some cases, it seems like maybe it was by your own damn fault that some people might be coming to
maybe
kill you.
The guys were already there, and they're only going to kill you because you weren't supposed to be there.
Yeah, or maybe you were threatening to kill other people, and now they want to kill you. Things get complicated in the some guys are coming to kill us genre.
There are many reasons, manifold reasons, why some guys might be coming to kill us, but Brad Shoemaker... You had never experienced these particular guys trying to kill those particular usses, have you?
No, but since we started this theme, I have had two separate nights of dreams about someone or something coming to kill me.
Oh, great. It's
oh,
working.
No.
Yeah,
I didn't
surely
want to.
It's not a coincidence. It was
I didn't want
monsters.
To inflict any psychological damage with this theme or anything. I just, I thought these movies were fun.
More monsters and aliens than people.
Okay.
But
okay.
Still, that heightened. It's not a fun state in which to exist.
No, just permanent existential dread.
Constant
of,
fear of being pursued and in mortal danger.
I mean, I'm always dreaming about Ice Cube coming to kill me, but that's for, that's a different conversation for my therapist.
You should watch some of his more recent movies. I feel like that'll alleviate any threat of Ice Cube.
Yeah.
Sorry, did you say T or Cube?
I said Cube, but
okay,
honestly,
yeah,
either
absolutely.
One.
Like, I love Ice-T, but nobody does, like, legitimate menace, and, like, Ice Cube is a singular talent in that particular regard.
I don't want Ice Cube to be mad at me about anything.
No.
I don't want to be, like, late on something with Ice Cube. I don't want to have accidentally cut in front of Ice Cube. I don't want Ice Cube to tell me, even in a threatening way, that it's time to feed the cat or the dog. Like,
Dude,
it's why all of his music is so goddamn good.
Yep. So before we get into the relative merits of Ice Cube and Ice-T, let's talk about the actual movie here that we are watching, which is 1992's Trespass, a movie that I picked somewhat selfishly. Because I have not seen this movie in many years, but I remembered liking it a lot when I saw it as a kid. And let me tell you right now, I think it might be actually better than I remembered.
Wow. Okay. All right.
I'm not going to stand here and tell you it is perfectly crafted cinema.
I think that's what
I am not
going to
say
me.
That it is a deep, meaningful picture. But I am going to say that it kind of kicks ass at what it does.
Okay. I respect your opinion.
It's fairly ridiculous.
Yes,
it's got a lot of things of a time in it that this is some early 90s painting with caricature and
there's a broad brush being applied here. Absolutely.
Yeah. There's some like parallel 90s kind of like this movie is not subtle in trying to bridge race relations or to paint with a fine brush nuanced inner city strife or the disparity between classes. This movie just is slap some shit on a canvas and says, all right, this color is primary blue. This color is, well, I should say this color is primary black and this color is primary white.
Yes.
Let's see what happens here.
Yeah, I mean, look, Walter Hill, the director here of Trespass, who had been directing for, at least over a decade prior to this, made such heavy hitters as The Warriors and Street of Fire and Red Heat and wrote, the story for Aliens. Walter Hill is very much a subtlety is for cowards kind of director. I have found, like, I'm not saying there's no nuance in his movies. That's absolutely not true. But I do tend to find that he likes pulpier, more, broad stroke, adventurous storytelling versus like really heavily nuanced political storytelling. But that said, I think that the broad strokes they're working with here, I think kind of work both for the story. And while this is not explicitly a political movie, I think some of the things that they scratch at with the fact that, let's say the black inner city gang that runs the territory that the two white protagonists run afoul of, make a very salient point in the movie, which is to say, white folks only come down here when they're looking to steal from us. And you know what? They're not wrong.
Right. Yes, yes. I think also it is interesting because if you take this of the time that we are in, and with the principal leads in this, say like Ice Cube and Ice-T, it is, I wouldn't say a reflection, but it's a blurry image of some of the stuff that is being echoed in the music that they're creating in,
yes.
in Ice Cube and Ice-T, whether those are hyperbole or they are a musing on their life, actual lifestyles, I don't know. But it paints an image of the gang banging 90s kind yes. of lifestyle, which I feel like is portrayed here in some real flourish.
This is like very early, like practically right at the beginning, right, of gangster rap penetrating the white suburban mainstream. Right?
I'd say this is about the point where it has made. Like it has definitely landed on the suburbs. Like
it's, this is right around the time. Like I remember kids in school, this becoming big stuff, you know, like,
yeah,
obviously like NWA was big in the '80s and stuff, but
yeah,
I feel like when did Cop Killer come out?
I think it was like right around here because when
92,
I was,
yeah. Okay. Yeah. Same year. So same year for that, like Tupac got big not long after this.
I would say it was right around the time the Chronic fully blew up,
yes,
is like when
yes.
this like the suburban, you know, the white kids fully went for this stuff,
right.
in a way that they hadn't previously. Boys in the Hood coming out, I think, also mm-hmm. had a lot to do with that, which, you know, it, there's something to be said about the fact that like these very gritty portrayals of what, you know, black inner city life is suddenly became incredibly popular with white youth, you know, mm-hmm. like they're, this is, again, not a movie that is trying to address
no.
or deal with any of that.
No. But
it is interesting the way the cultural, like, cachet started to build up around these performers in this time.
That's kind of more what I meant was that was the gateway for people like Ice-T and Ice Cube to start getting cast in
yes.
relatively. I mean, I don't know how big or popular this movie or how well it did, but relatively,
poorly.
Like, oh, really?
Yes.
Interesting. But still, like, getting pretty close to top billing in, like, a fairly major mainstream motion picture, right?
Well, so we'll lead off here talking a little bit about the cast before we kind of get into the actual making of the movie, because there isn't a ton of like trivia or history around this one. But so prior to this, Ice-T had been in some stuff. Like he had been both in not a ton of movies, but he had been stuff like the Break-In movies. He had been in New Jack City prior to this. He had also been in a movie called Ricochet, which is another mm-hmm. like kind of crime thriller movie. And Ice Cube had only been in one thing, which was Boys in the Hood the year prior to this. So,
which is a hell of a thing to have been in.
Yes. As a debut film to appear in, like that, yeah. that is about as singular an early 90s movie as there is.
And kind of an intense role.
Like, yeah. And, you know, so in coming into this, like there is some acting experience, and Walter Hill is on record saying, "We hired them specifically because we think they're good actors." Like, mm-hmm. it's not just that they are, you know, popular rappers. He had very little knowledge of rap music. He was more of a, you know, like R&B and soul kind of guy. But he was just like, these guys had an incredible screen presence. And in fact, he allowed them to do some ad-libbing and rewriting of their dialogue to make it more like what they felt like characters in this position would talk like, as opposed to what the screenplay was kind of telling them.
A lot of Ice Cube's dialogue in particular reads as extremely authentically something that Ice Cube would say.
Definitely. Like, Ice Cube doesn't have a lot of gears as an actor, but when he, like, the ones he has, I feel like he wields very well.
Yeah.
And there's those parts in this movie where there's, like, they're talking to the video camera and stuff, and, like, they're basically cutting promos on one another.
those video camera scenes are primarily what I'm thinking about in terms of the ones that feel like they were ad-libbed somewhat.
You know what's gonna happen? Motherfucking police gonna be around here, and these white motherfuckers' friends. You think it's on now, it's really gonna be on then. King James. Like he king of the street or something. Ain't nobody king of the street. It's all about survival. It's all about getting yours. It ain't about taking no chances, and it damn sure ain't about jeopardizing your whole motherfucking crew.
Nah, man, I like Savon, man. I like him a lot, man. He's just a hothead. He thinks he knows it all. I used to be just like Savon, man, when I was coming up. Just like him. See, this guy's been philosophical about this shit, man. It's all crazy. As long as you know it's crazy, you're all right. But as soon as you're trying to make logic out of this, you fucked up because it don't make no sense. See, the white man makes dope, right? Then he gives it to us. Then he wants to buy it from us, right? Then he puts us in jail when we sell it to him, man. It don't make no fucking sense. Only thing a man's got is his family and his pride. That's all he's got.
So the whole video camera motif that kind of appears throughout the movie is something that Walter Hill read about in a Washington Post article, that some street gangs were going to the trouble of filming a lot of their activities on home video. And he was just thought that would give them like an interesting way to kind of put you on the ground in with these people while this stuff is going on.
Oh, that's interesting. I thought it was just kind of some like MTV early 90s aesthetic where the handheld camera, they'd cut to those terrible handheld Dutch angle camera shots and stuff with Dan Cortez doing a thing.
You may notice that the Dutch angles get more severe as this movie goes along, and that is very much like as things get more chaotic, he just wants everything more off-center kind of filmmaking. Our other actors here who are not rappers, we have Bill Paxton. Obviously, we all know who Bill Paxton is. So far, Predator 2 is the only Bill Paxton movie we have done for this show, but I'm sure we will find our way to more of them.
R.I.P. Bill Paxton.
Yes, R.I.P. Bill Paxton. This is not the only movie that has a Predator 2 connection in this month's slate, I will say. Okay. We'll talk more about that next week. And then we also have William Sadler here as the other main guy, and William Sadler is one of those "oh, that guy" character actors that I feel like everyone knows when you see him. And he had only done about this is his 10th movie.
Oh, wow. Okay.
But he had been in some big ones prior to this. He was the bad guy in Die Hard 2. He was Death in Bill and Ted's Bogus Journey the year prior.
Huh. Interesting.
I did not know that, and now thinking back to it, yeah. Now, yes, of course.
Our bass player, the Duke of Spooks, the Doctor Shock, man with no tan. Please say hello to Death himself, the Grim Reaper. You might be a king or a little street sweeper, but sooner or later you dance with the Reaper. I love show business.
Did you not know he was Death in that movie?
No.
Okay. Yes, he is straight up doing the fucking Seventh Seal style Death character in that movie, and he's great. He's great at that. I love Billy Sadler. I think he is like genuinely one of those great, like, kind of stone chiseled face character actors from this era that I just love seeing in anything.
Real blue collar vibe, at least in this.
Yes.
Yeah. And the vibe is, I'm going to say this is a heist movie, more or less, but it is not a heist movie in the sense that these are not professionals doing crimes. It is more a couple of chucklehead firefighters from Arkansas who have, let's just say, stumbled their way into a treasure map after a old criminal burns to death in front of them.
Yep.
Leaves them a treasure map to a cache of gold that he stole in the 1940s from a Catholic church.
How long? That entire scene couldn't be more than like 30 seconds long.
It's a real quick setup there.
Yeah, there's like half a minute of iced tea at the beginning, half a minute of this fire and the discovery of the map, and then it's credits. Go.
Like this guy literally... The building is burning. He pulls a gun on the firefighters, hands them the treasure map, and then runs into the fire.
Stay back!
Shit!
Bill! I told on Jesus Christ! Hide it! Fifth floor apartment! I never told! Here, take it! Take it! Save
take
my
it easy,
soul.
We'll get you out! Come on!
Forgive me, Jesus!
Try to save your life!
That's it. That's the whole deal, pretty
That's
much.
The whole
We're
setup
trying
for
to
the
save
movie.
You, man.
Save my soul.
And
my soul from God.
And where this cache happens to be is in an abandoned warehouse in East St. Louis, and that just happens to be a territory that is controlled by King James, played by Ice-T. His gang, which also includes, I'm trying to remember what Ice Cube's name is, Savon.
Savon.
Yes, and a number of other folks. He kind of uses this area to do, let's just say, murders. It's a very lightly trafficked area, shall we say.
Yes, that's And there's like a revenge plot here for some other gang member that killed somebody else.
They lure a guy to this place to murk him after that guy apparently killed one of their people.
Right.
Yeah. It's kind of the opening scene makes it seem like that's going to be a focal point of the movie. Is that killing slash revenge killing inter-gang warfare thing? But then they actually just dispense with that guy right off the bat. It's really just an excuse to get them into this same abandoned area.
It does give them a hook for like the witness stuff. Like it does give them that whole thing.
But that character is not a major player in the story like he would be.
Not at all. And it's basically just an excuse to get all these characters into the same place so that they can run afoul of one another. And that's kind of the makeup of this movie is two white guys come to the inner city to an abandoned area. And the gang that is there does not like the fact that they watched him murder a guy while they were trying to steal gold.
Couple of blue collar yokels come extremely out of their elements.
Yeah.
Opportunistically trying to score and realizing that they are in way over their heads.
Very much so.
That they shouldn't be here.
And
the whole point about, cops don't come out here.
Mm-hmm.
Nobody cares about this place. Like, you only come here because you want to score off of us.
And so this movie was originally conceptualized all the way back in the 1970s by Bob Gale and Robert Zemeckis. That you know Robert Zemeckis, but Bob Gale has also been Robert Zemeckis's writing partner for a number of years. He co-wrote all the Back to the Future movies with him.
Yeah, I watched a Back to the Future like brief documentary recently, and like they struck out a bunch of times.
Yes,
like Zemeckis and Gale as a writing directing duo made a series of stinkers, or at least box office failures. I don't know if they were bad or not before they finally hit on some stuff.
And so this movie was originally called The Looters. And other than some very specific character details, like Lucky, the brother of King James, being his girlfriend in the original script, and obviously some of the stuff that is more about like the specific, let's just say, gang movement of the 90s versus like what they would have had in the 1970s. A lot of it was kind of just what made it into this movie. They changed the ending a little bit too. They rewrote a few things. Walter Hill, I think, added a little bit of humor to the script that was maybe not there before. But this screenplay had just been bouncing around for a long time until producer Neil Canton showed it at some point to Walter Hill, who loved it enormously, quote-unquote. So Walter Hill at this point, like I said, he'd been directing for well over a decade, if not two at this point. Had made a number of successful films. This was not one of his successful films. This movie bombed pretty bad. It made less than its $14 million budget overall at the box office. And there were a few different reasons for why this may have come to pass. This movie was originally supposed to come out in the summer of 1992, which, if you know your history, that's when the LA riots were happening.
Right. God, I didn't think, I totally failed to remember that.
And so in the moment, as that stuff was going on and they were getting ready to release this movie, which was still called Looters at this point, they said, this is a bad time to do this.
Good call on them.
Yes. So they delayed it about 6 months. It came out late in the year. They changed the name to Trespass after going through about 50 different possible names. Walter Hill never loved the name change, but he just kind of went with it. This is also in this period, this is when Ice-T did have his cop killer controversy in the run-up to this movie. So there was a lot of kind of weird swirling stuff around this movie, which, again, despite not really being about any of the stuff that we're talking about here, unfortunately kind of got wrapped up in all of it.
Yeah. Was NWA over by now, by this point?
Yes, they had they had since broken up. Solo careers had begun at this stage. Eazy-E had definitely done some solo stuff at this point. I think Chronic had come out by this point.
Okay, that seems like that's around the time. Eazy-E was still alive, though, here?
Yes, he was still alive.
Do people still know? Like, does the cop killer stuff still follow Ice-T around? Like, it was really...
So.
It was a huge, big, like... He wound up pulling it off the album, right?
He did. He, in fact, requested it to be pulled off the album during the controversy, though ensuing re-releases have added it back.
Okay.
I forgot about that.
And that was a Body Count?
Body Count, yeah. That's his hardcore band.
I think that kind of, that didn't that get to the level of like George Bush calling him out? Like the literal president was going after it.
I stand against those who use films or records or television or video games to glorify killing law enforcement officers. It is sick.
It definitely became one of those flashpoints for a certain kind of like conservative media watchdog thing.
If I remember correctly, there were different police unions supporting or not supporting pulling it off. Of obviously, there were police unions of more diverse background. I remember being like, "This should be allowed on here. This is free speech." And other police unions being like, "If any cop dies, we're suing. Suing body count." And I don't know who published it, but they're whoever put this album out. Like their blood is on their hands. It was like before culture war stuff was an every minute thing. This took up a lot of airspace.
Yeah, I've always been very much one of those like kind of free speech absolutists when it comes to stuff like music and whatnot. Like if I don't like it, I just won't listen to it. You know, that's always the way I approach it. But I remember this. I remember this controversy vividly. I remember it happening, despite the fact that I was not really listening to Ice-T or much hardcore punk in 1992 because I was like 11. But you know, once I kind of started digging more into that stuff a few years later, listening to it, I was like, this is just good music. Like I understand where like the, you know, maybe some of the anger comes from, but it's like it's art. You know, it's like whatever you think of it, it is still artistic expression.
It was also at a time in the early 90s, not to dwell too much on it, but just to put this whole thing in context, this was around a lot of stepping in with Protect the Children in video games. This was, like Brad mentioned, NWA wasn't that long before this.
The Two Live Crew stuff was happening around this time as well.
Parental Advisory Board was getting off the ground, if not at the same time.
Tipper Gore stuff was not that old.
So this was like right around like... you know, it was a lot of mixture. It, under the guise of Protect the Children, I felt like, looking back now, a lot of maybe scared white folks being like, yes. I don't want my kids listening to this stuff.
Huge, huge fresh wave of moral panic around, like, the youth media in multiple places.
Yeah. So, again, this movie coming out in this time period, it's a very weird transitional time.
It is, and again, I'm not going to chalk all of that up to why the movie failed at the box office.
Also maybe not the best movie.
I'll say this. I really like this movie. I think there is something to, like, there is an energy to it, there is a pace to it, and I think the performances are really strong, but generally across the board, even in some characters that are definitely more stereotypes than they are characters, I think that the performers get something out of it. I just think it's like a well-made, pulpy, you know, kind of action thriller. Like, it is not necessarily a thoughtful or meaningful movie, but it doesn't have to be, because it's just doing what it's doing, and I think it's doing pretty well.
I could say I think this is a fun movie without saying this is a good movie.
Okay.
This is, yeah, it's a...
I will say it's a good movie. I'm just not ready to call it a great movie.
Okay,
you know what
fair
I mean?
Enough. Yes, I know exactly what you mean.
And again, I think a big part of it is that I think that... Okay, the first 5 minutes of this movie are not its strongest. The setup is very quick. I think the early stuff with extremely aw shucks Bill Paxton and very... I like scumbag William Sadler. I think Bill Paxton is maybe a little too aw shucks in the beginning here for what it needs. But once they get into the warehouse and they start going on their gold hunt and then all the shit starts popping off, I feel like everything kind of clicks into place.
So Sadler does like hard edge really well here, because quite literally in the first scene in the firehouse where Paxton is showing him the map, I literally was already sitting there going like, is this the kind of guy that's going to like bring you along to get the gold and then shoot you as soon as you've got it all in his possession?
Hey Don, remember what that old guy said about burning in hell and all? Those envelope here. I've been going through it, filling out the report, and I think I figured out what he meant. It's pretty wild.
Organ Brothers and Company. Eugene DeLong employee ID card.
Eugene DeLong was the old man. Now, read this.
St. Louis Herald, February 23rd, 1940. Catholic Church looted and vandalized. Thieves broke into St. Anthony's Church last night and made off with a fortune in religious articles, objects most of which were pure gold, were on special exhibit from Europe.
It's gold. Solid gold.
Sweet Jesus.
I think it was old Eugene that robbed this church.
Shit. I'd say there ain't no question about it.
We just solved a crime, a 50-year-old crime. Wow. That's pretty wild.
Hey, Vince. I think our ship just come in. This, my friend, is a treasure map.
He definitely has, like, whether it's the 1800s or now, this dude looks like he has gold fever.
Oh, yeah.
And will collapse a mine on everybody else to get the gold out, or in some cases just, you know, he's got a look. You can see the glint
in
his eye.
And that look is a guy who would spend a lot of time grousing about his divorce.
Also that.
Yeah.
Yes.
That's why he needs the gold, man. His life is in shambles.
Yeah. And I like Bill Paxton's Aw Shucks character. I think it's necessary in this movie because this, out of all the cartoons happening in this movie, like, Bill Paxton is probably the most audience surrogate to get in here and be like, I don't know what's happening. Bill Paxton pretty much from the jump just wants to go home.
Yes.
He just wants to leave, and the audience just wants him to leave, and he can't get out.
Yeah.
Like, at every single turn, Sadler is making the escalating choice.
Yeah.
Yeah, because that's the only thing that matters to him is getting the gold. He doesn't give a shit about anything else.
Like, Vagrant shows up unexpectedly. Let's fucking tie him to a chair and gag him.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, like, good old Art Evans is Bradley here.
Let's just at every turn make the choice that's going to get us in deeper and make things worse.
Yeah, the second they arrive there, it does not take long for them metal detecting to run afoul of Bradley, who is the vagrant that lives in this abandoned warehouse complex. Though they also do find a hanging body at one point of someone else who had been there for some time. But yes, there's no one there, man, other than this guy.
I think Bradley might be my favorite character in this movie.
He's the only one who seems to have a firm grip on how stupid all this shit is.
Yes.
And it's just like, fucking, I don't even want to be here right now.
Get him off me! Die! Freeze, asshole!
Don't do that! Come on! Don't shoot me!
Get up! What the hell are you doing jumping him like that?
I'm pissed on him. I thought he was the crackhead trying to steal my money.
Who are you? Talk!
Come on now, I didn't take that money from nobody. It's my money. It's all the money I got.
What are you doing here?
I live here. What you think, you dumbass? I've been hiding in the back ever since you come.
What's your name?
Bradley.
Well, guess what, Mr. Bradley? You're trespassing here.
You full of shit. Don't nobody own these old buildings.
Man, I got a good mind to take you down and bust you.
Oh, man, give me a break. You ain't gonna bust me for nothing. I'd have run your ass in for breaking here and messing with my stuff.
Yeah, I ain't gonna give you a break. I'm gonna take you down.
Get in there! I didn't invite you up here! You got no way to be treating me like this! Who do you think you guys are coming in here?
Now cover him. You know how to use this thing?
What are you asking me for?
Do you know how to use it?
Of course I know how to use it. 4 fucking years in the state guard, but I ain't part of this shit.
You're already part of it. Now you take it and keep him covered. Take it!
Look, Don, he's just an old tramp, man. I don't see why we just can't let him go.
Listen, we'll come back with the cops. A whole bunch of his friends.
Hey, man, I ain't going back to no cops. I ain't going to no cops. Look, I don't care what you're doing here. I don't know nothing.
Cross your hands. Cross them!
Damn it, Don, we're getting in awful deep. I thought we agreed if we found somebody here, we'd cut him in on it.
Well, I say you ain't entitled to jack shit. Now, you want to cut him into your share, you go right ahead.
Share what? What you great boys cooking up?
Keep your mouth shut, old man. You listen to me, Vince. I got mortgage payments on a house that I just got kicked out of, plus my own rent money, which they just jacked up on me, plus fucking taxes that get higher every fucking year, just so that guys like him can keep eating without doing any work. Now, if that loot is here, buddy, I want it, and I'm not going to share it with some old bum.
He gets it. Once things get rolling, he's kind of in on it to be like, we should get this gold.
He sees the opportunity at some point, but like early on, all he wants to do is just get the fuck out of there and grab his stuff.
They give him hints of like, what were you doing in another life? Because like when he's talking about the gold stuff and how it doesn't tarnish, and like you know, aw shucks, Bill Paxton's like, wow, really? He's like, man, you don't know you don't know shit about shit.
Wow. This stuff's been in there over 50 years. It's not even tarnished. You don't know nothing, do you? That's the beauty of gold. It never tarnishes. It lasts forever, too. You can melt it down, pound it, twist it, piss on it. But it's always the same gold. It was here long before we were, be here a long time after we're gone. I bet you a lot of men have died for the gold that's just in this one piece.
How'd you get to be such an expert on the subject?
Probably heard it in some pawn shop somewhere.
You don't know nothing, neither one of you.
Like, I was waiting for some reveal that he is actually like a former history professor, yes, or something like that.
Yeah, or you know, had a company that traded in, you know, gold or precious metals or something, like knew the value of this stuff beyond just the gold lust. But they do not go into that.
They like to allude to stuff. I mean, it's sort of like Napoleon in the last movie. There's a lot of allusion, but not really any payoff on it other than just this guy clearly knows more than he is letting on.
Yeah, I mean, they go out of their way to make Bill Paxton have zero street smarts or wits about him, where at least Don is his name, the Sadler character. He's like, seems to be a little bit more aware that when people want to kill you, you have to keep your head down kind of thing, where...
Well, I mean, he's the one who has, I mean, we'll get there in a second, but he's the one who has the immediate idea to tie the guy to the door, you know, to, you know, kind of use him as a human shield. Yeah. Like, he's clearly able to think on his feet in a really devious and awful way.
Yeah, yeah, yes, yes. But it's, yes, but like you said, Brad, it is Sadler's character that is escalating things that basically once they have a hostage in the form of Bradley, before their real hostage.
Yeah, before their real hostage comes in, yeah.
Things have now taken a turn because, they were gonna, I think initially, and this is in that, like, whirlwind 2-minute intro, split the money with anyone who happened to be occupying the place, or kind of they went in with intentions because they weren't sure what this place was like to, like, you know, bring people in on it and do it, and immediately that is not the case.
Yeah,
Sadler is both more street smart and also more reckless here.
Yeah,
like, yeah, yeah, we'll get into it.
So the gold again is was heisted back in the 1940s from a Catholic church, and specifically it is gold artifacts that were brought to the church by the Vatican on a tour of the United States and has been missing for the last 50 years.
I enjoyed trying to puzzle out here if any single character in this movie understands the historical value of these objects, or if everybody would just melt these down and sell the gold.
I think maybe Bradley has some notion that there is something or going on there that isn't, like, there's actual value here beyond just, this is gold. Everyone else would melt this shit down in a heartbeat.
Yeah, because, I mean, it would be much easier to move this material as just melted down gold bars, but the historical artifacts are worth exponentially more money.
Yeah.
I want to say again, Bill Paxton's character has a little bit of, like, well, we should return it. Like, you know, we should
give it
back. He's also
the one who wants to call the cops at every turn, and it's just like, dude, you are not committed to this plan at all.
Like, we should give this back. This is stolen property. And, you know, it's constantly Sadler half being like, dude, just shut up, and half being like, come on, I got a mortgage, I got a whole thing going on.
But I mean, the first thing he says when they uncover what this guy was and, you know, why he had these materials and this map, is that he says, oh, we just solved a 50-year-old crime.
That's right. Yeah,
he's not even thinking about
trying
to go and get the gold himself.
Nope.
Now, that's all Don. That's all Bill Sadler. And so, unfortunately, as we said, this warehouse is within the gang territory of King James, Ice-T's character, and his crew, which is made up of a really interesting cadre of Ice Cube and a handful of other actors, my favorite of which might be Stoney Jackson as Wicked, specifically because that dude's look and movements look like he just stepped out of the Rhythm Nation video. It's kind of amazing.
He's the one that vaults over the roof of the car, isn't he?
Yeah, with the ponytail. Yeah.
Yeah. That, like, that move, I'm pretty sure that was him. I don't think that was a stunt double doing that.
So he's,
like,
a dancer too. He was actually in the Michael Jackson Beat It video.
Okay, that makes more sense then, because, like, being able to do a leap like that is pretty damn impressive.
Yeah, he's good. I like this whole crew. I especially like what's his name once he shows up.
Luther? Is it no Luther's
Raymond?
The...
Is it Raymond?
Raymond,
the weapons dealer.
Yes.
Yes,
the guy in the big blue suit.
Yeah,
yes,
he's good.
Raymond is quite entertaining.
Luther's the sniper, right?
Yes.
Okay, I think that's right.
And then we also have Cletus, played by good old Tiny Lister. God damn, I love Tiny Lister.
Poor Tiny Lister, never getting to say any lines.
Yeah, I mean, he does in some movies, but definitely not in this one. In this one, he's literally a character trait, which is that he wears metal sports cleats. That's like his whole gimmick.
Yeah, he's a bit of like a weird Bond villain.
Is his name really Cletus?
Yes.
Interesting.
Yeah, his name is Cletus in the movie, and he wears cleats.
Okay, sure.
Yeah.
But like metal cleats for stomping on your face, I guess.
Yeah, I think that's the implication there. Yeah. And so they're there, as we said, they have lured a person that they want to murder to this place with the promise of some kind of deal. And then they straight up kill that guy while our Arkansas friends are inside hunting around and also tying homeless people to chairs.
Uh-huh.
And regrettably, Bill Paxton happens to witness the mannequin of this bad guy falling down this long section through the skylight down onto the ground. I only mention mannequin because when they really luxuriate on the shots of the thing flying down, you can really see that thing bend in some ways that human bodies do not. But also, it's a good shot. I like that. I like all the slow-mo shots of things falling from rooftops in this movie.
It works.
Yeah.
What the hell's going on up there? Where's Don?
Y'all making a big mistake. I don't know nothing about nobody getting off.
I don't think so, bitch. You the one made the mistake, motherfucker.
Hey, KJ, you got to slow this shit down. This situation does have an explanation.
Now, who you been working for, man? Who you sold us out to, punk?
Why are you sweating me, man, huh? You can kiss my black ass. Now get on your little phone and run tell that.
Yo, Cletus, let's show this man your shoes. Real fucked up if you had to use them on you. Stomp a mud hole in that ugly ass face of yours.
They know immediately that they have been seen.
I think Ice Cube is like, again, a very threatening Ice Cube is like, what are you doing here? You should not be here.
Yeah, like they get very quickly straight to the central kind of point of conflict here, which is the hostage standoff. Like they corner Bill Paxton, and then here comes Sadler out of nowhere shooting with the gun that he brought and grabbing Lucky, the younger brother.
Yes, the younger brother of King James, who was sort of the bait in this plan that they had.
Right.
And they grab him. So one key thing in this is that the room that they are hunting around in, they make a very specific point to point out how secure this door is and how secure this room is, and saying, like, you know, this building's fucking built like, you know, it's built like a fortress. It will never come down, and they have a big bolted door they can just hide behind. While this is going on,
they don't make them like this anymore.
No.
Whoever built this place, they knew what they were doing. This place is like the pyramids. It's going to outlast all of us.
That's right.
Yeah. And so they manage to get inside this room, bolt it shut, and then very quickly tie Lucky, who is called that because he has survived multiple drive-by shootings, to the door so that should they start trying to shoot at the door again, they will kill him.
Yep.
And then...
That the movie.
And then it is a long series of events in which they try to either lure them out or try to escape, and it all goes haywire.
About three quarters of the movie commences, which is just a bunch of different escape attempts and various gang members kind of going off script in some spots. in ways they perhaps should not. Like King James got to get his people in line.
He does. Yeah, King James, I'm going to say, has some organizational challenges in front of him. As much as people seem to respect him, there is definitely a bit of a power struggle going on there between him and Savon, even before things really start getting haywire. And then some allegiances get formed and some things fracture. They don't have a cohesive unit. They have not worked on their team building.
No, they need... He should also turn his cell phone off when he is doing extreme hostage negotiation business.
I kind of loved the recurring bit of him pulling out the meaty cell phone and saying, like, I ain't got time to talk to you, Marvin. Yes. Now's not the fucking time.
Yeah, I don't know what alternate movie Marvin is in, but I kind of want to see that movie where he needs to get a hold of King James right now.
Yeah, dude, like, the pipes burst in the building, man. We need you here right now. All right, well, before we get into the long series of trying to kill these guys and not successfully killing these guys, we need to take a break. So we will be right back. And we are back. And our friends from Arkansas are trapped in the room with their hostages. King James's gang is running around trying to figure out how they're going to get him out of there and save James's little brother, Lucky. He calls in the reinforcements, and that is where Raymond shows up. And I'm going to say they definitely framed Raymond as here comes the real wild guy with all the guns, and they do not undersell or oversell that.
No.
He seems like a pretty fucking cool guy, and he does have a lot of guns.
Yo, Wicked, this is Raymond. What do you want me to park, man?
What do you think's going on?
Nothing good.
I think I finally figured out how you boys are going to get a chance to get out of here. Body bags.
Pussy in the trunk.
Raymond's built for some.
All right. Yeah. All right, this shit here takes out a rat's ass at 300 yards.
Shit, I take that. I was a sharpshooter in the army.
You sure you're a sharpshooter? You don't look like no sharpshooter.
I ain't shitting. I was the best in my company.
Oh, he's back, motherfucker. Right. This is mine.
Go ahead, boy.
Go, Wicked Devin, man.
Oh, man, I don't need no big-ass gun. Mess up my suit. This right here do me just fine.
Oh, no.
No. All right, Mr. Leader, man. So what's your plan?
Come on over here. Them country motherfuckers is crying about the police, right? They want cops. Give them cops.
Just in his trunk, hanging out, and everybody's like, "Go! What are you going to pick? What's your... It's like it's basically like the Counter Strike shop, like just
yes.
Like what are you
buying
or what do you want? I want some dexterity, so I'm gonna stick with a handgun or like I'm going fully automatic here. He doesn't have a rocket launcher, but he might as well.
Yeah, they managed to mostly get away from like major explosives until the very end, but he's definitely got an arsenal. And I say my favorite Raymond detail in all of this is the part after the initial wave of trying to get these guys with his guns, where he's like, I gotta go. I've got other jobs. and Ice-T is basically like, I will pay your day rate. Just right. Stay here.
Just slaps a stack of cash at him. He's like, I just hired you for the day.
And so there's just a long series of madcap attempts at, you know, breaking in, breaking out, like, they try to climb out, and then they have snipers set up outside. They have Tiny Lister on the rooftop. So he tries to shoot at them anytime they try to get out. They do a whole community theater bit where they pretend to be a cop.
Yep.
And they try to arrest, quote-unquote, one of them. But then it is pretty quickly found out that is all a ruse. As soon as Bill Paxton starts waving the window, hey, we're up here, please rescue us. And then they start shooting at them again. It's a lot of this back and forth for a while they try and figure out how they're going to get them out of there. And I feel like the thing I didn't remember about this movie is that there's actually the back half hour of it is a whole separate thing from this. I remembered it mostly just being this, them just constantly trying to get them out and not succeeding.
Yeah. We got a couple of setups here with Lucky tied to the door. They kind of establish.
Also, he's a heroin junkie and is starting to go through withdrawals at a certain point.
Right. So we get that kind of, we get Chekhov's kind of baggy that is like, oh, okay, this is definitely going to come into play later.
Mm-hmm.
We got, I think they find the gold when they're looking for Tiny Lister's cleats with the metal detector.
That's a good bit later.
Oh, is that after a couple of attempts?
That's after the cop stuff, I think,
Right,
there's the catwalk stuff with Tiny Lister shooting the board out as they're trying to cross it.
Yeah, yeah.
Earlier.
And then they're going to make their weird jump. They have all this rope. They have a lot of rope. They brought a ton of rope with them.
I think they were assuming they were going to have to maybe, like, bring giant piles of gold down from the window or something. I'm not really sure. But also Bill Pax is like, I could rappel. And it's like, rappel? What the fuck are you talking about?
Maybe Arkansas firefighters do a lot of rappelling.
Yeah.
Somebody does end up rappelling, to be fair. It's about the halfway point where they find the gold. Which is also the point where they untie Bradley and kind of like sort of make him an unofficial third member of their crew.
I think they've realized, A, that he's not really a threat to them, and two, that if they leave him tied to a chair, there's a decent chance he will just get shot in the face by stray bullets at some point. So I will say that's maybe the most generous thing they do in this movie, is just not let that guy die.
They've also, I feel like by the time Bradley is in the game, their options are really running out for getting out of this place. Is this, they have that one, like, really sketchy looking catwalk they're gonna try and jump to, and that disappears shortly after that too.
But that's also where Savon is really going, like I said, off script, because Ice-T has just declared like, no more fucking cowboy shit, stop just going off shooting shit.
Yeah,
he immediately goes out there with this M16 and just starts like spraying down that catwalk.
Tell you to kill that cowboy crap.
Yo, man, I just shot the catwalk out there, man. I'm thinking we gotta discourage him from getting across somehow.
You need to stop thinking with your trigger finger and use your brain. You're gonna get my brother killed.
All right, man. Fuck it, all right.
Which is, you know, like, it's a good idea.
Like, yeah, but he is, like, very, he's going out of his way to defy the Ice-T character over and over.
And I mean, look, Ice-T does have a personal stake in this. You know, his brother is in there and he doesn't want him to die. But also, you know, when you have an existing power struggle here, when you do things that make to some of your soldiers make you look kind of weak, it creates an opportunity there for, you know, let's just say bad behavior. And in this case, Ice Cube is just like, nah, fuck it. I want these guys dead. I don't really give a shit.
Yeah, you kind of start getting a sense of who's on what side pretty quickly. Like, I don't know this character's name. He's got a dangling earring. I happen to be looking at him right now. He hangs out with Andre the Sniper a lot.
Mm-hmm.
Like, he's very anti Ice Cube. Like, he's very, you better do what King James says, you know?
Yeah.
And Raymond is super just in it for himself and willing to go along with Ice Cube to get his share once they realize what's going on.
And then in all of this, there's also Video, who is the guy who's videotaping everything.
Yes.
And he's definitely on King James's side, because Savon wants absolutely nothing to do with this filming bullshit. He does not care. He breaks his camera at one point later on. But, you know, I like having Video in there, because we do get that moment of, you know, Ice Cube sort of cutting a promo on King James to, I believe, Raymond. And then also then there's Ice-T on videotape just fucking spitting game, man. Like, just telling you how it is on these streets.
Mm-hmm.
And that is, I like, you know, it feels like a weird digression in the movie, but also it does kind of fit, I feel like, at least with the character.
You know, I will say for the most part, you get King James's motivation. He clearly wants to go save Lucky, his kind of, you know, the only family he's got, right? Like, he wants to go save. Ice-T seems to want to just kill these guys.
You mean Ice Cube?
Ice Cube just wants to go kill these guys in a way that is, maybe he wants to prove himself that he is, like, you know, he's got a bigger aspirations here, but he really just wants to cause mayhem, I think.
Yeah.
Well, he just wants to be done with this trifling shit so he can get back to whatever it is he thinks is actually worth his time.
Yeah. Like, to him, this should have been over hours ago because the answer is just blow this entire place up. Who gives a shit?
It really is. Just take it down.
Yeah. But, I think there's also, a lingering notion of, he does not agree with a lot of King James's decisions. He's younger than him. He sees, an opportunity there. So, yeah.
And King James is, recognizes that he is, kind of this young buck that just needs to learn a little bit more, but he's good at what he does, but he just needs to get a little more experience. And, Ice-T is like, I've got the experience and we can get there. We can move this team forward. And I think Ice Cube is not really having it.
Yeah. And I don't want to gloss over too much about what happens here. There's some real goofy events that take place as they try to lure them out and try and kill them and all that stuff. But I think Hill mines some pretty good tension out of these sequences. There is a really good sense of omnipresent threat going through a lot of this stuff. And while it is, again, portrayed in slightly cartoonish broad strokes, I think the actual the cinematography and kind of the pacing of the different sequences is all pretty well done.
You do definitely get the feeling strongly that these guys are pretty much screwed. You as a viewer don't see any obvious way out of this any more than they do. And Sadler shuts down Bill Paxton pretty quickly in terms of let's just give him the hostage. Let's tell him about the gold. Let's call the cops. He's like, dude, they're going to kill us no matter what. We are witnesses to this murder. They have to get rid of us. There's a lot of fraying in that relationship.
Yeah.
And they start pretty much beating the shit out of each other at some point.
I think the movie does a good job, and which is kind of atypical for movies like this, in making anyone's death seem important. I think only one of, I can't remember who dies, but they shoot somebody when they're trying and it's a big deal. It's where King James kind of turns and is like, okay, we're done. I'm calling in reinforcements. We're done here.
Yeah.
It's not like an action movie where people are just falling off catwalks constantly. Yeah, yeah.
No.
Yes. For sure.
Because even when they bring in more soldiers, it's four guys.
Yeah.
There's maybe 10 dudes total kind of running around in here that aren't Bill Paxton and William Sadler. But a couple of them die, and when they do, it's always a kind of a big impact scene when it takes place, and they comment on it.
Yeah.
Oh, fuck, they killed blank.
Yeah, yeah.
You know? Yeah, yeah. The first time one of the crew dies, you immediately know, oh, shit, the stakes just got raised dramatically. I also was just reminded, the viewer actually realizes these guys are even more screwed than they do, because you also know that they have trashed their ride.
Oh, right.
They slash the tires on and rip up the CB radio.
Yeah, and Raymond was on a reconnaissance mission.
Or whatever that is, the truck. But anyway, you know that they're not getting out of here. Even if they get out of that room, they don't have wheels anymore.
And that's where Raymond finds the newspaper clipping too, right? And he's
Newspaper clipping and the remaining and all the materials that are not the map.
Right. And he puts it together very quickly.
This is a little more toward the end. Does King James ever find out about the gold? I don't think he does. I don't think, Ice Cube definitely, who does Raymond only tell
he
Ice
does,
Cube
he
about
only
it?
Tells Savon.
He does ask him at the very, very end, why are you here? And then kind of the, drugged up Sadler is like, it's about the gold. And he's like, what? Yeah. You know?
Right.
What the fuck are you talking about?
Yeah. Right. Yeah. Because Ice-T the whole time is just like, why are you here? You should not be here.
Right. He's definitely smart enough to be fixated on what the fuck are you doing here?
Yeah.
As the salient detail to extract out of these guys.
He's not dumb. He initially suspects they might be cops, but then, he realizes when they ask for the cops that can't mean they're cops. If they were cops, they would have the means to communicate with other cops. They would not be asking them to send the cops.
Right. Or at least not cops on a legitimate purpose,
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, yeah, actually, yes. When Raymond comes back with the map, he does. He just pulls Savon aside and tells him privately about the map and what's going on.
Hey, hey, listen up, man. You gotta keep cool.
Touch me, motherfucker.
You got me all wrong here, man. Now, from where I'm standing, you're the only one around here making any sense. King James has lost it. I can't even deal with the motherfucker no more.
Ain't that the fucking truth?
Yeah, see, that's why I figure you're the only one around here I can trust. You and me, we got the same interests.
Interests? What interest?
Interest in making sure them white motherfuckers don't walk out of here. Now, you want to know why they didn't signal the police? Because they found something. Something so valuable, they don't want nobody else in them.
Is that right?
Not the way I figured. You and me, we work this thing out. We come out looking real nice.
Go.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like, he clearly... Raymond clearly does not agree with sort of the approach here. Raymond, being a man of arms, would like to get into some armed conflict here and just get this done so he can go off and do his own business. And so he senses in Savon that there is a like-minded soul here, someone that just wants to fucking get this shit over with and get the money. So in this case, he tells him about it because he knows it's like, okay, this person's going to help me get this done.
Yeah. This is also around the time that like Ice Cube has been lobbying to burn the place down.
Mm-hmm.
And Ice-T finally goes for it. And so now they're like literally making Molotovs and like planting C4.
But there is, I think right around this time, correct me if my timeline is wrong, but there is around this time where you get this kind of tete-a-tete with Bill Paxton and Ice-T. And it feels like things might be reaching an understanding, but then Savon kind of blows it up, right? Like he does something where somebody fires a shot and then both sides think it was a double cross.
And kind of no point of no return
at that point. Like you almost get this understanding, this parlaying, and then it's all gone.
I forget what the exact moment is, but like, so the sniper sees the fight happening, I think, between, Vince and Lucky after Lucky breaks out.
That's after the blown up parlay.
Yeah, that's a bit later.
Yeah, this is after Raymond informs Ice Cube about the gold because they need a reason to burn the place down so they can get everybody out of here. I forget exactly. It was like a weird moment where it's just like I'm not exactly sure how this got pulled off, but somebody fires a shot and both sides feel like they were double crossed into like talking and
yeah. And it's clearly just Savon manipulating things.
Yeah. Yeah.
Which again, very cynical operator here,
but the,
we've also got this bit of the real cops showing up randomly.
Oh, right. Yes, yeah.
In here around this time, this movie, like so much of this movie is just these little short vignettes of escape attempts or fucked up negotiations or cops showing up I'm not gonna say it all blurs together, but it's hard to keep all of it straight because like that's kind of the entire movie,
right? Yeah.
But yeah, it seems like those cops actually do, well, they say there were reports of shots fired, actually, is what they're here for
in the area. Yeah, and there have been plenty of shots fired at this point.
Yeah.
So yeah, they pull over Raymond as he's sort of like driving around in the area, and there is a sense that like, oh, this could go wrong, we might have to shoot these cops. But then he successfully manages to avoid it by pure happenstance when they get another radio call and they're just like, we gotta go, like let's just like cut this guy loose, who cares,
right?
And
this is the big break, I think, between Bill Paxton and William Sadler. This is where
they get into their fight. That's, because yes. He's desperate to flag these cops down, and Bill Sadler is like, absolutely not.
Cops!
No.
Wait. It's a police car. It's the real police.
No, so we don't need them.
Crazy. Hey, move! Hey, move!
Listen to me, Vince. We got $1 million worth of gold here. If those cops get in, they won't take it away.
Fuck the goddamn gold!
Fuck you. You ain't gonna fuck this up for me, Vince. I want that gold. The only reason we're in this shit is because you fucked up. If you didn't go out there when they killed that man, none of this would have happened. I can get out of here on my own, Vince.
Are you with me or not?
Now you listen to him. Them cops will come in here and shoot us in the head and take the gold for themselves. That's what they do.
You keep an eye on Lucky. You keep him fucking quiet.
Yeah, and they've got all the gold out of the ceiling at this point. Like, they know that they've made their score if they can just get out of here. Which Sadler, just fucking flying too close to the sun, just cannot accept.
Yeah.
Sometimes you need to cut your losses.
He's pop committed, though. Like, again, his entire life now depends on getting this gold out.
Look, Bradley's also on Sadler's side, and is like, those cops are just going to take that gold.
Oh, yeah, yeah, for sure.
You're going to get nothing.
We still might not get out of here alive. The cops in here are not all, like, on the up and up. Like, this might go very poorly.
Yeah, so this is what you were about to allude to with the sniper stuff, where they finally, I can't remember why they decide to finally let Lucky shoot up. I forget what they are trying to accomplish there by doing that.
They don't want to kill him. Like, Bill Paxton, they have a witness, and, like, they're basically, they're going to leave, and they're like, if we leave, they're just going to know we went up the chimney.
Yeah, like he's like, pretty clearly dope sick at this point, and... Yeah. Right, yes, he's like, they talk about killing him, but
yeah,
I was wondering what his aim was here. Like, I again, Sadler is like, I got this kind of sinister quality. I was like, is he gonna, like,
yes, OD
intentionally try to make him OD? Yes, here,
I thought that same thing, but he genuinely, I think they're just gonna, like, maybe try to get him into a stupor or
yeah, like, just kind of let him go on a nod so they can get out of there. But
no.
I mean, to be fair, Lucky does a good job of suckering him in, because he definitely, like, I mean, he is dope sick legitimately, but at the same time, he is definitely knows these guys do not know how to shoot heroin into a person's arm, and therefore is flagging them down, saying, if you do this, you might kill me.
Yeah, he's definitely selling the panic of, like, oh, don't fuck up my veins, like, you don't know what you're doing, like, please just let me do it.
So he gives him one arm free, and what happens here is, I'm going to say, the single most jarring moment of violence anywhere in this movie.
Yeah, it's pretty...
It's pretty rough.
No idea how lucky you are, mister.
Come on, please, man, let me do that. Come on, man, let me do it by myself. You don't know what you're doing. Hey, man, you can hurt me if you do it wrong, you know? Come on, man, listen. Just untie me. Look, I swear... You won't have no trouble. Come on. Please, man. Come on. Man. You might mess up one of my veins, man. Come on.
All right.
Please.
All right. One arm.
Cool. Come on, hurry up.
What are you waiting for?
Just waiting for the vein to pop up.
Pretty viscerally unpleasant to see somebody get stabbed in the neck with a syringe.
Yes, no matter what it's full of. It's
And we saw what it was full of because we painstakingly watched them boil that spoon full of heroin right before that.
Yeah. I thought Sadler was going to OD here. Possibly.
I'm going to say he probably should have, if we're being realistic about
it.
I mean, he's not in a good way.
No.
No, he's definitely not. Although, I feel like the movie... has a little bit of a hard time ending itself, or things get a little messy and all over the place here in the last 15, 20 minutes.
Yes, it definitely tries to, like, we gotta wrap this up.
Yes.
A lot of shit happens very rapidly, and some of it is a little silly. For example, him going from barely conscious, doped up on heroin, to, like, fist fighting and shooting in, like, 15
He definitely
minutes.
Hulks up at a point where it feels like he should not be.
Right. Yeah, that's the kind of thing I'm talking about, but,
But he is out for a little bit. Like, he's really just writhing on the ground and moaning and not doing much else.
He's pretty out of it, but then this is
the Lucky fight with Bill Paxton.
This is Luther making a real bad decision. I was just watching this happen. It's like, you're not going to take the shot, right? Really? Are you seriously going to try to do this?
It is a poor choice on his part, especially after he has been repeatedly reminded, don't go fucking firing in there because you might hit Lucky.
I do think Luther's response to this is maybe one of my favorite parts of the movie because it's so, like...
It's like a child who knows that they broke something they're not supposed to break.
It's very much like, I shot Lucky, but it's not my fault. Just make sure he understands. It's not my fault. I'm getting out of here.
I'm leaving. Bye.
I have to go, but you need to just tell him it was... And, like, I thought he would just say, like, why wouldn't he just say Bill Paxton shot, or they shot Lucky, but at least he does own up to it in a weird way. I mean, he seems very scared, so... He seems...
He owns up to it, but they cover for him. They like, do, they yeah. say they shot Lucky.
Yes. Is it Wicked who is at that
Wiki.
Point? Wiki. Yeah. Who goes in and covers for him. Like, they shot Lucky. How did it happen? I don't know. They shot him.
Yeah.
It happened.
What else do you need to know?
Yeah. And at that point, it's...
It's on.
This building
is coming
IC
just grabs
down.
That yeah. fucking M16 and goes for the door. Like, it's
yeah.
on.
Yeah. Yeah. I think they're gonna burn it down at this point.
Yes.
Yeah,
there's no reason not to.
They're totally wiring the place up to blow.
They've got C4. They're talking about trying to mix stuff together for napalm-esque materials.
He's got a pretty professional looking detonator, I have to say.
Mm-hmm.
That is some like professional grade demolition stuff.
And inside we've got Down and Out Sadler. We've got Bradley, who is like, we need to get out of here. At this point, Bradley has also said, for a third of the share, I can let you in on one other way out of here, which is the chimney,
mm-hmm.
Which thankfully has handholds on it, which is a nice touch for that chimney. And they're going to go to the roof, not to the ground floor, I guess, because that's where everybody is on the ground floor. So they're going to go to the roof and make their way out.
Yeah, it seems like it's implied they can maybe hop to another building or there's something. Like a catwalk or something they can...
Yeah.
Try to
I mean, the factory
out.
Is a series of different buildings and complexes and stuff. So, like, there are definitely other ways around. It's just that where they are, there is a very limited number of exits.
So, Bill Paxton is like, look, they're going to come in. They're going to see the hole. They're going to think we all went up to the roof. You hide in this room 2 feet away. And while they come up after me, and then I'll go try and get help. Try not to burn alive.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the plan, and that's what they're going with.
Yeah. And, you know, I'm going to say it could have worked, maybe, but some things get out of hand there pretty fast, you know.
Well, first, Bradley forgets to bring the freaking gold into the room, which is...
There is that.
There is... Come on, man. Which...
Look, he wasn't even in on this plan to begin with. He's just kind of fucking... He's just bebopping his way through this
yeah,
thing.
Yeah.
It all kind of goes off the rails because King James has just gone on full-on revenge quest at this point. He doesn't give a shit about anything else. So, like, the real inciting event is that they decide not to bust the door down, but burn it down.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
To get in there, which, of course, naturally leads to, within 5 minutes, the entire place being on fire.
Mm-hmm.
So that you get a good tense ending sequence while everything's on fire.
I think this, as messy as this ending is, I think it's great because it is just a real good culmination of all the nonsense that has come beforehand. And it is, I think, you know, I generally didn't know who was going to make it out and
yeah.
who wasn't.
I was very, not quite on the edge of my seat, but I was definitely very engaged going like, all right, how is this going to play out? Like, how are they going to get out, or are they, or who's going to live here?
Hearing that they might have done some different test screenings with different endings makes it feel a little more Clue-like in... Oh, they can juggle the pieces or rearrange the pieces at any time they want here.
Yeah.
That helps explain also how some parts of the ending are sort of shot or portrayed.
Yeah. Like a little ambiguous.
Well, sort of, I can't think how to describe this. Just like close-ups that would be very easy to swap out with a different shot or
sure.
different scene.
Yes.
Type yeah. stuff of characters talking to each other kinds of things. Do we know what the other endings were?
So the only thing I'm certain of is that there was a scene originally that showed Savon dying.
Interesting.
Like not just the fire, like the build, not just the building collapsing around him and sort of, you know, the aw shit where I'm going to fucking die here. Like bit, like they actually showed him dying. And apparently that did not test well.
Interesting. Okay. Yeah. It did stand out to me that he doesn't get a death scene here, although it's like pretty inarguable that he definitely bites it when the building explodes.
I'm not sure that much of anyone from that gang survived the end of that.
Let's see. Raymond definitely gets shot by Savon. Like
yes.
They shoot each other. He's dead.
Because
dead,
they backstab one another over the gold.
Yeah.
Where you going, bud? I see you found the gold. Thought you supposed to have your ass in the basement.
I know where I'm supposed to be. What the fuck you want to pimp me off for? You wouldn't have known shit about that gold if it hadn't been for me. I figured that entitles me to a little bit more than 10%, don't you?
Hell no!
Superfly this motherfucker!
That was maybe the only other kind of silly thing about the ending here is that they pull the trick, the same trick twice very rapidly of
yes.
two people shooting each other at the exact same time. Mm.
I do like that Savon gets the gold from Bradley, and it does have the gold for a little bit before getting... How does Bradley get the gold back? Is it after Savon gets shot?
I believe he drops the bag when he gets shot.
And then he just takes the gold and runs?
Yeah, he does. He just straight up scurries off with it.
And then like the header beam or the building starts collapsing, so he can't follow him? Okay.
And again, in the middle of all of this is where William Sadler finds his Hulk energy and gets into a full-on fight with King James.
Why are you even here?
It's, again, a valid question.
It's a valid question.
It's the question.
You're going to die, motherfucker. I'll take you with me.
What's this all about, man? What the hell are you white boys doing up here anyway?
Gold. It's all about gold.
Gold? You crazy.
And if I was him in that situation, I wouldn't have accepted that answer either. What the fuck are you talking about, the gold? What do you mean?
Right. Yeah, and they just off each other.
Yeah. I kind of suspected, I mean, definitely when he got the heroin in the neck, that Billy Sadler was not long for this world. Though I appreciated they gave him a little bit more of an ending other than him just dying of drug overdose.
Sure.
Yeah.
Even if it is totally ridiculous.
There's nothing redeeming about it. He didn't know.
The way it's shot, like, the editing is really weird here. Like, Ice-T starts shooting him first, and he's full on flailing backwards as if he's taking a chest full of lead. And then within a split second, it cuts back to him looking very stern and aiming at Ice-T and shooting as well. Like I said,
he is still dripping blood at that point, so they didn't like cut it together from a previous shot or anything. It's like he got the squibs, but he just had one last gasp of energy.
Yeah, it's all just kind of silly movie cliche stuff.
Yeah. And then I'm trying to think who else might have made it. Because Raymond's dead, well, Savon is probably dead, King Luther, James is definitely dead.
Luther got out early, so Luther
Yeah, okay, he counts, yeah.
Yeah, he's
I think
out.
Video and the other guy whose name I couldn't remember get out, I think.
Goose?
They just disappear because at one point the other guy is aiming a gun at Bradley, and then Video walks up and is like, he's not part of this. What are you talking about? Why are you going to kill him? He's not the problem.
That's right. Yes. So I think it is implied that they probably just bolt out of there at that point.
Okay.
Yeah. And I forget, does Wicked make it out?
No, he gets hit in the back with a pickaxe by Sadler.
Oh, yeah.
That's right. That's a good one. You're right.
Which is weird because he doesn't even take a hit to the head, but he goes down as if he's like basically unconscious.
That looked rough. That looked like a rough hit.
I don't think there's a good hit you can take from a pickaxe. You know what I mean? Like, there's no way to kind of gimmick that does not result in bad things happening to your body.
Is Tiny Lister just still bringing bodies back and forth to the river?
I don't think they really depict any kind of outcome for him.
They kind of forget about him after the metal detector detects the gold. Like, once they get away from he's walking around on the roof and they're trying to track him. They just kind of forget about him.
Maybe he went home.
Yeah, maybe he just, you know, he's going to go play softball.
Yes, right.
That's his future.
Or golf. Are those golf cleats? I don't know what kind of cleats those are.
Baseball, I think, is what
they
say
they wear
baseball.
Metal cleats? Okay.
But I don't know.
Yeah,
if that's
I mean,
legit.
it could be golf also, but I think those are baseball cleats.
Okay. Yeah, I guess everybody kind of, some people make it.
Yeah, I mean, Bill Paxton makes it out.
He does, and he's still a sweetheart at the end when he goes to Bradley, and Bradley's like, you need to leave now. And he's like, come with me, man. Come on. We can get out of here.
He's
like,
such a dumbass. Oh, my God.
The things Bradley is saying are so painfully obvious. I don't know what happened to the gold. You really better get out of here. You should really go.
Those guys are coming down here right now to kill you. I should leave too, but I'm going to stand here until I make sure you go.
That's right. I'll hold them off. Don't worry. You should go. They don't care about me.
You better get out of here while you got a chance.
Bradley, you okay? I was afraid you guys didn't get out. I went down the chimney and got out through the furnace. Now get out of here. Where's Don? He's dead. You up with the gold. I'm telling you, you better get out of here before the niggas catch you. What about you?
They don't care about me, but they will kill you. Now move.
Come with me, man.
I can't keep up.
Come on.
Get out of here. Run. Don't worry about me. Go on. Move. Move. Go on. Run.
The second that Bill Paxton runs off around the corner, like, was the sack of gold was just like sitting at his feet the whole time.
Yes.
Like right there.
Yep.
Yes. 100%.
Look.
So Bill Paxton was not paying attention in that moment.
Which, like his dumb rube thing knows no bounds.
I like him in this movie. He's so dumb. Come with me, man.
Like,
I
literally.
Can't.
Bradley just picks the sack up and starts laughing and walking off with it the second he's gone.
Which, you know, Bill Paxton is as running. He's like, I'll never forget you, Bradley. Your sacrifice.
You're my dude.
You're yeah. I'm going to come back here and I'm gonna
make you the godfather of my children if I ever find
totally.
You, man.
Yes.
As and that dude's laughs. Just like, I am never going to think about you again unless it is to laugh at you as yeah. I sit upon my throne of riches.
As Bill Paxton is trying to tell the story to the first police officer he runs into, where he's like, and he was a hero and he saved us all. I don't know how you pawn off old gold like that, but I hope Bradley figured out a way.
Yeah, look, man, he seems like he's resourceful. I think the right person ended up with the treasure in the end, ultimately. Uh-huh. I think nobody deserves it more than the guy who was living there, right?
I could have given Bill Paxton like a little gold cross or something.
I could
throw a cup at him.
Yeah,
him and Bradley splitting it would have probably been fine.
Or something that's like some scene during when they're in their gold hysteria when they first find it. If Sadler puts like a gold cross around his neck or something, and then he forgets he has it until he's running away, and it's like, oh, okay, maybe you got a little something. And he would definitely turn it in to the cops and to be like, the story was true. Look, there was gold here. But no, Bradley's got the whole duffel bag.
Okay, so the one thing we all agree on, though, is that they're absolutely under no circumstances should any of that stuff be returned to the Catholic Church.
Probably.
Should
not.
It have been? No.
No.
Would Vince have done it?
I think so.
Oh, yeah, for sure. He would have felt very guilty. I'm surprised Vince didn't say, like, this is God's wrath for, you know, trying to steal his gold at some point. That's the kind of level.
I think this shit would have been bad enough to turn him Catholic.
Yes. Yes. I don't know what he was before this, but yes, for sure.
Let's just say a loose Protestant affiliation.
Yeah, I was going to say probably Protestant.
Yeah.
Yeah. Let's not get into it.
Not a lot of Catholics in Arkansas is all I'm saying.
Probably not. But yeah, it's... It ends well for Bradley, which is fine.
Yeah. No, again, if anyone is going to fucking sail off into that good night with the gold, I'm glad it was him, because that dude was just minding his goddamn business when all this started, and he is relatively blameless in all of this.
He never did find his friend that couldn't get his shoes on, right?
Well, no. You know, maybe it's for the best they didn't tell him what happened to him.
Yeah.
Yeah, I really do enjoy how just above the fray he is for all of this. Like, he doesn't like or respect or trust literally anyone here for good reason.
Like, he know, like the Arkansas guys are just nakedly out for profit for themselves. Mm-hmm. You know, the gangsters are murderers. There's no one to really root for in that perspective. So it's just like, literally all I want is to mind my business. Just get out of here, please.
He almost goes on a little bit of a screed at one point when he's facing off against some of the gangsters, basically saying like you guys are the ones that are fucking everything up around here, or something like that.
You know, I mean, this is probably allegory for something, but he winds up being invisible for the most part to, you know, nobody knows what to do with him. Like, he is like, cause when the gangsters find him, they're like, just let him go. Like, what are you doing, man? Like, just let him go. He's not a part of this. And I feel like Bill Paxton...
The white guys just treat him as, like, just a nuisance
right.
that they just need to, like, put to the side while they do their real dirty business.
Well, Sadler does. Like, Paxton you know, is against tying him up in the first place.
Yes.
Like, seems to at least regard him as a person. I mean, Sadler starts to go full on.
Yes.
Full on, like, my taxes are too high because guys like him.
Totally.
Get to eat without doing any work.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Shit. That dude definitely, like, if he had survived this, he would have a tremendously awful Facebook account.
So there's a definite divide between him and Bill Paxton on stuff like that.
But yeah, Sadler winds up.
He's dead.
He's got the gold lust. Yep.
If they ever did a sequel, they would not bring him. The Legend of Sadler's Gold would not happen because that dude is extremely fucking dead.
Yeah.
It's a fun movie.
Yeah. Yes, it was entertaining. I had my main question is, like, once the credits started rolling, like, was the soundtrack for this popular or well thought of?
I think the soundtrack for this might have the most lasting cultural impact of any aspect of this movie. And I say that as someone who likes the movie, but I had the soundtrack, I think, before I had ever seen the movie.
Okay, that's exactly what I kind of suspected might be the case, because it's straight up Ice-T and Ice Cube doing new music for this movie, right?
Yes. So there's a couple of things about the music here that I didn't get into. There was originally a whole different score done for this movie by a prominent jazz musician who I'm forgetting the name of off the top of my head. But Walter Hill decided he did not like the score at all, and so he changed it out. He got Ry Cooder to come in and do the movie score. But yes, the soundtrack is a large collection of major hip-hop artists from this particular era, including a team-up song to do the title theme by Ice-T and Ice Cube, but there are also tracks from Public Enemy, Sir Mix-a-Lot, Black Sheep, Gangstar, Dub C, like, just a lot of heavy hitters from this era. And I'm not going to say this was, like, one of the most successful big rap soundtracks of the era, but it was successful, and it is definitely one of the things I remembered instantly about this movie.
How much were most of those other songs taken from existing albums, or?
I think in a lot of the time here, if it is an existing version of a track, it's usually a remix or some version that includes, like, a new featured verse by another rapper. But I think most of what's on here is either B-sides or new tracks.
I feel like I knew a lot of people who had the Trespass soundtrack. I think I might have had it on, like, I want to say cassette, but maybe it was by this time CDs, or my older brother did.
Yeah. Yeah, I owned a lot of soundtracks because you usually would find them used pretty cheap at various record stores. And so I remember getting a copy of this at some point. It's good. Like, it's good by the standards of this era and its soundtracks. It's a good one. And then, that's Trespass.
It's a point in time.
It is.
Yeah, for sure.
But I think it's a pretty good movie. Like, yes, there's a lot of weird cultural bullshit that kind of gets wrapped up in it because of when it came out and sort of the general tone and tenor of the time. But it's just a really solid, pulpy heist thriller, you know? Like, I think all the central performers are turning in good work here and make what is a pretty goofy story fly.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, I'll buy that. It's, I think the performances are good in it.
Yeah.
I think it's held up. Like, it could have been way less fun if these were cornier performances, but they're fairly sincere throughout the whole thing. So they're
all the actors are doing good work here for sure.
And like we said at the beginning, like, Ice Cube is very threatening in this. Like, he is.
Yes.
He commands the room, whereas, like, Ice-T plays that role pretty well of, like, somebody who seems a little more streetwise.
I have not seen every movie or performance that Ice-T has done, but I will say Ice-T's acting style is, what if Ice-T was this guy? That is basically how he acts. But the thing is, I think he's pretty good about choosing projects where that works. Like, he is doing the Ice-T thing, but he applies it to roles where that is the thing that it is calling for. And it doesn't feel like he gets miscast very often. You know what I mean?
Sure.
And
yeah, I'm not sure how to qualify this. I feel like there's a contrast there where Ice-T's acting is a little more theatrical.
Yes.
And Ice Cube's is extremely just sort of, like, from the streets, you know?
It's very reactionary. Like, it feels like he is just constantly reacting to stuff and is just, like, you know, improvising to a certain degree.
Yeah. Yeah, like, you really buy him as, yeah.
But Ice-T, I mean, look, Ice-T is a guy who feels like he has rehearsed lines for everything. You know, like he has,
yes.
He can just deliver a fucking monologue off the top of his dome because he just knows how to construct stuff that way.
Yeah, that's kind of what I mean.
Ice Cube was, I never saw it, but he was in the Three Kings where they also get gold,
yes.
Right?
Yes.
Okay.
That is the Gulf War era David O. Russell movie, which is one of the only David O. Russell movies I will kind of defend because I think that movie's pretty good.
Okay.
But yeah, like he's good in that too. But that's one of the few instances where I can point to him and say, like, that's an Ice Cube performance where he isn't playing a gangster. You know what I mean? Like eventually he went on to start doing a lot more comedies.
Yeah, didn't he? He started doing like family comedies at some point, right?
Yes.
Well, he was in like, I think he was in a lot of like, those barbershop
movies.
Are
We There Yet?
Oh, you mean like those comedies?
Yeah.
Ah.
But, you know, Friday is a great comedy and he's very good in it. And it's like, I think that is one of the first times I saw him kind of like stretch his range a little beyond just kind of being a menacing presence in a movie.
Mm-hmm.
Like he's great. He's legitimately a great, great actor in Friday, I think. And I think he's also very good in Three Kings.
How about Ghosts of Mars?
He brings to that, to the role of Desolation Williams, I think is his last, Desolation Williams is the character name. He brings to it what John Carpenter is asking from it.
Okay, okay. One of the Carpenter movies we have not watched yet.
No. And I will just say for anyone at home who is potentially interested in another movie starring Bill Paxton, which is also kind of a crime thriller in this vein, though it is a lot less pulpy and a lot more tense, if you have never seen A Simple Plan...
I did see that. That is a good movie.
With him and Billy Bob Thornton.
Yeah.
That is another movie where, let's just say, some yokels run across some cash and put themselves into a lot of danger while dealing with that. That is a much more successful, much more tense thriller version of this kind of movie, where Bill Paxton is legitimately amazing in it.
I think I saw that in a theater. That takes place in like Minnesota or something, right?
Something like that. Yeah, okay, like a drug plane crashes and they find a bunch of money in it, him and his brother.
Oh, I forgot about that movie.
That movie is fucking fantastic. It was all I was thinking about while watching this movie. It was like, man, I should watch A Simple Plan again.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Well,
so where's this one rank for you, Vinny?
Oh, man. Where does this one rank? Let me look at the big old list here.
I kind of feel like we might be in a little bit of an In the Mouth of Madness situation here, where this is a movie I like a lot, and you guys are like, that wasn't bad.
You know, yes, maybe, but, like, it's fun. I'm going to put it... Oh, man. Things always bubble up to Close Encounters, and then I always go...
Is that kind of like the demarcation line of like, this is where the stuff I like a little less is and the stuff I like more is?
Yeah, kind of, because then I always say in my mind, like, is Trespass better than Close Encounters? Is like, is that where this list kind of gets all weird in that, did I enjoy this more?
Okay, no, but there's a definite circumstance where if you asked me, I might rather watch Trespass. It is kind of mood-based.
I think I'm going to put Trespass between... I'm going to put it between Johnny Mnemonic and Resident Evil on my list.
I think that's not unfair.
Yeah, I think that's where I'm going to put it.
I think it's better than both of those, but, you know, I think that, yes, this movie might be a little bit more of an acquired taste. I like it a lot, but there is definitely some very goofy aspects to it. I would put it somewhere probably in the solid middle of my pack.
Yeah, that's about right for me, I would say.
Yeah, this is bottom third for me,
okay.
But it's... But it's below Mortal Kombat. It's below Police Story 3. But it is above the Super Mario Brothers movie and Virtuosity. So
I would definitely put it above those for sure.
It didn't cross the Close Encounters threshold, which is
okay.
Predator did, but I think I really like.
Well, Predator should is the thing. I think Predator is a better movie personally.
Assault on Precinct 13. That made it.
I'm kind of surprised that one ranked so highly for you. I like that movie a lot, but
I really enjoyed that.
Good.
I'll tell you this: we got another movie coming up, which I feel like in my mind I've confused with Trespass over the years, like mingled together in Judgment Night.
Yes.
So I am curious to watch that because I don't know if I will remember any of that.
Have you actually seen it?
So that's the thing: is like I think I have seen at least bits and pieces of it, but a lot of the stuff I thought was in Judgment Night was in Trespass.
Okay.
So, like, I'm not quite sure now.
Now, Brad, what do you know about Judgment Night? Because I know you haven't seen it.
Is Dennis Leary in it?
Yes.
I think that might be all I know.
Okay. Do you know much about the soundtrack?
No, but is it another one of those, like, legendary soundtracks? Or
it more so than Trespass, which is just a very good soundtrack.
Okay.
This one is kind of legendary because it is... It came in right at the exact cultural moment where rap rock began to primordially form.
I see.
Okay. So, like, this is post, Anthrax, Public Enemy, Bring the Noise.
Okay.
But not that much post it. Yeah, great song. But we'll talk about the movie here in a second, but the soundtrack is a collection of big rock acts of the era and big rap acts of the era teaming up to produce original songs for the soundtrack. You have heavy hitters like Helmet teaming up with House of Pain, and Onyx.
Yes, I super remember this now.
Yeah. So when I put this movie up on the drive, I'm also going to upload the soundtrack because that is going to be part of the homework for this Judgment Night soundtrack or this podcast, because I'm going to tell you right now, I have seen Judgment Night. I don't remember a fucking thing about Judgment Night other than Dennis Leary and Emilio Estevez and Jeremy Piven being kind of slimy. That's it. That's all I remember.
Okay.
So I don't think it's a very good movie, but the soundtrack has this incredible cultural footprint that is, like, kind of not to be dismissed.
I'm looking at this soundtrack and I remember the Judgment Night soundtrack being talked about a lot, but I don't remember any of these songs. I do not remember a Pearl Jam and Cypress Hill collaboration.
Oh, man.
Yeah.
What? Weird.
Yeah.
So I'd say the Onyx and Biohazard and Helmet and House of Pain songs were the biggest ones from this soundtrack. But I think, look, we'll have a conversation about rap rock in general during this time because I have some complicated feelings about it. But I will say this is one of the best justifications for the genre there is this soundtrack.
Okay. Okay. I'm very excited.
Get excited at least for that part, because I'm not sure that we're going to be that excited by the movie in the grand scheme of things.
I'll tell you what. I'm excited to give Emilio Estevez another shot here.
Like, this is not the shot he wants, man. I'm telling you.
He's really kind of low down on my list now. He's like, what's Emilio Estevez? An okay actor? He needs a couple of shots here to get back up.
I believe there are movies that Emilio Estevez is good in. I'm not sure we are going to have watched any of them by the time next week is over with.
He was artificially high because of Men at Work for me. I don't know.
Hey, Repo Men is a great movie.
He's good in The Breakfast Club. You're right. I always think of Repo Men, and so I don't know if I have actually seen Repo Man.
Yeah.
I always think of the Jude Law one.
Yes. Which we narrowly avoided having to do as part of one of the themes from this.
For now. All right. Should we get out of here?
Yeah, let's wrap this up. So as we said, Judgment Night is the next film on the docket here. And definitely go look up that soundtrack if you get the chance beforehand.
Oh, you know, I missed one of my notes here. If you guys have the movie up. Is it using a Jurassic Park-like font for the credits in the beginning? Because I know Jurassic Park is...
Not just like papyrus?
I don't know. It looks so familiar.
Oh, I don't know what the... Yeah, I know what you're talking about. I can't say.
I truly don't know what that font is, but I definitely noticed it when I saw it.
Like, definitely struck out as like, this seems like it should have some meaning, but maybe it doesn't.
I think the meaning is someone thought that was a cool font.
Okay. Okay. Yeah. I'll have to take another look at it. But thank you, Alex.
And thank you guys, as always, for joining me on this here podcast and this journey through cinema and television. And thank you to everyone at home for listening and watching along with us. We'll see you next time. With the ski mask, gotta get the cash. My homeboy ain't home, so fuck it, I'll trespass.